Well, we move from deep green to deep blue. The next case is Electric Boat Corporation versus the Navy, 2019-16-21. Mr. Gershenvorn.
Thank you, and good morning, Your Honors, and may it please the Court. The Board's dismissal of our claims as untimely defies basic principles of contract law and must be reversed. That is so for three principal reasons. First, the Board held that our claims for all six boats accrued by the critical date, even though any injury we suffered was caused by OSHA and not by the Navy. But that was wrong. Our claims against the Navy don't accrue until the Navy does something to injure us. Injury by OSHA is not enough. Second, the Board held that our claims accrued even on the five boats for which the Navy was paying us every penny that we could ask for and every penny that we did ask for. Again, the Board was wrong. Our claims on those five boats did not accrue because we had suffered no harm, and certainly no harm posed by the Navy in light of those payments.
Wasn't it inevitable that because of the OSHA requirement you would ultimately need to make a claim to the Navy?
So, Your Honor, it actually was not inevitable. It was very likely, but just to be clear, under the terms of the contract, and this is with respect to that five-boat argument, it was possible that we could be paid all of our progress payments and indeed would suffer no profit damages at the end. And indeed, in the last boat, the 783 boat, we suffered no damages.
Can you remind me? After the change in law, didn't you submit some kind of notification or letter about that change in law, and that would therefore require some kind of adjustment to the contract?
So, Your Honor, we did submit a notice. That notice is it's the notice required by H30D of the contract, and it's at page appendix 453,
right.
And it just says we have incurred costs or likely to incur costs because of the OSHA regulation. But if I could step back, the way to think about that notice,
I would like you to stay there with me, no. Because it at least reveals something to me, which is that your side understood that you needed to follow through on H30D.
Yes.
And then I see there's also an H30E. And then H30E seems to contemplate that when there are these changes in law that will increase the prices and therefore require some kind of adjustment to the contract price, H30E calls for you to request a price adjustment in accordance with the procedures entitled Documentation of Requests for Equitable Adjustment, which
exactly
is H9.
Right. Correct.
So I guess the question here is, maybe this isn't a classic breach of government contract case like you're characterizing it, but maybe this is more a garden variety equitable adjustment claim that has to comply with all the procedures for an equitable adjustment claim.
So, Your Honor, the question about what procedures you follow is different from the question of claim accrual. I think the best way to think about that and to answer Your Honor's question directly is to think about the insurance analogy. If you get hit by a driver and you want to make a claim with your insurance company, your claim against the insurance company doesn't arise until the insurance company denies you a claim for payment. So to be sure, just like H30D, as Your Honor said, and H30E, the insurance company may require you to give notice of the accident, and we did that, H30D. The insurance company may require you to document all of your expenses, your car accident, your and all of that, and we did that. That's H30E. But that's a separate question from when does the claim accrue. And whether you're talking, and that, we're not aware of any case where in a situation in which a claim could accrue before the counterparty has caused you any injury at all. Indeed, we think that flows from this court's statement over and over that accrual requires accrual of a claim requires liability, causation, and injury. And what the government has done is read the causation requirement out. The Navy never did anything that caused us injury. And we think that
are you saying in other equitable adjustment claim contexts, contractors aren't allowed to file their equitable adjustment claim until after, I don't know, a period of negotiation and ultimate denial, and then only then are they allowed to file their equitable adjustment claim?
Absolutely not, Your Honor, and that gets exactly to the critical distinction. In the usual equitable adjustment case, it is the government that asks you to make the change, and it's precisely that, as this court has said, the reason for these equitable adjustments is to avoid the breach of contract that happens when the government says to you, please make the change. In that situation, it is a government cause. The Navy in that situation is causing the harm. The Navy is causing the injury. It falls squarely within this court's requirement that there be liability, causation, and injury. What's different about this case is that the government is taking on a different obligation. The government has essentially said, we are going to insure you for a change in law that we had nothing to do with. We, the Navy, had nothing to do with. And in that situation, the Navy has done nothing to cause us harm until it refuses to adjust the target price. The case that seems to me exactly on point is the CB&I case, right? In the CB&I case, what happened was the contract was triggered by the idea that the Russian government was going to dispose of its plutonium. When the government didn't do that, the Nuclear Security Administration had an obligation to rebaseline and to adjust the target price. And what the judge said in that case was that claim doesn't accrue until the NNSA refuses to adjust the target price. It does not accrue when the contractor has increased costs because of the Russian government's failure to dispose of plutonium.
I guess my problem is I think of this like a simple car accident. Say on the way here to court, you hit me with your car and you cause damage. Now, I could go back and forth with you asking you to pay for it, but there's no doubt my claim occurred when you hit me and I realized the extent of my damage, which I did when injury was established. I could negotiate back and forth with you. My claim, it's not that my claim only accrues when you say, no, I'm not paying.
So, Your Honor, I think your hypothetical is really perfect and helps to illustrate the difference. Your claim against me, because I hit you, accrues, no doubt, you are right. You don't have to negotiate. It accrues the moment I hit you and you hit damage. But the claim that you have against USAA or Aetna or State Farm does not accrue when I hit you. And that is the critical analogy here. The government, what happened
what
in our case
claim?
Was OSHA.
Wait, I don't understand. What do you mean the claim I have against USA?
The insurance company, Your Honor, is different. So what happened here was OSHA imposed costs on us by raising the
same government, and your contract agreed that if there's a change in law, the Navy had to be bound by it. Not just their change in law, but anybody's change in law.
So, Your Honor, I think that is critically important. That is not correct. We did not contract with OSHA. We contracted with the Navy, and there is no
document. But your contract with the Navy said if there's a change in law, not a change in law made by the Navy, but a change in law made by anyone, and it impacts you, then you're injured.
We are injured, but remember that liability.
You were injured the day the law changed. And what's more, you knew it because you gave notice to the government that you were anticipating higher costs as a result.
So, Your Honor, I just want to make clear. What this court's cases require is liability, causation, and injury. We have not had any injury that is caused by the Navy in that situation. And that is the critical. I'm not aware of any case.
Well, if you've not had any injury caused by the Navy, why'd you ask them to pay for it?
Because they have an obligation, under the contract.
So you believe they're liable for the injury caused to you, but you don't think they caused it.
Correct. They don't cause the injury. OSHA causes the injury, and then the Navy is liable to us when the Navy causes injury to us when it refuses to undertake its obligation to pay. It's not an obligation to negotiate. But I'm not aware of any case.
So then under that logic, I'm sorry. I'm sorry, I cut you off. Under that logic, then my claim would not start accruing until your insurance company refused to pay when you hit me this morning, because they're really the ultimate party.
No, Your Honor. I just want to try one more time. You are I think Your Honor's hypothetical is really perfect. There are two separate claims that are going on, right? One is between the driver and between you and me, because I've hit you, and one is between you and your insurance company. Those two claims do not accrue at the same time. Your claim against me because I've hit you, that occurs when I hit you and I incur costs.
Are you also arguing that you didn't have a sum certain at the time of the OSHA enactment?
So we argued that below, Your Honor, and we did not prevail on that, and we have not brought the sum certain up there. But we think it's sort of a similar idea is at issue here. So let me explain. I do think that the critical point, Your Honor, that I strongly disagree with, and I don't think you'll find any support for it, is that the Navy and OSHA are the same. Our contract, the breach of contract, the duty is with the Navy. It is not with OSHA. OSHA's obligation to us. We could have brought an APA claim against OSHA the minute they issued the reg and it caused us harm. But that's different from when we can bring a claim against the Navy, because the Navy's obligation is to pay us for the OSHA reg. And that is exactly the same as when you say to your insurance company, I've been hit, please pay me because I've been hit. Your claim against the insurance company accrues when the insurance company says, no, thank you, we're not interested in paying. That didn't happen here until May. But even if Your Honors disagree with that.
It feels like a chicken or the egg kind of situation. Here's what I mean by that. The OSHA regulation changed the law, mm-hmm. changed the requirements, increased the costs. And what has to happen first? One way of reading H30E is that's your time to make the first move, and your first move needs to be filing an equitable adjustment claim. And that's how you resolve how large of a modification to the price of the contract you can get. The other way of looking at it is, it's only until the government, in your view, unreasonably refuses to give you the price adjustment that you want, and then that's when you file your equitable adjustment claim. And so that's what I mean by chicken or the egg.
So
which one has to go first? Is it you filing an equitable adjustment claim, or is it the government technically going first by refusing whatever negotiated offer you want to make?
And I think the statute answers Your Honor's question, because what the statute says is that a claim shall be submitted within 6 years of accrual. Accrual is a word that has settled meaning under contract law for centuries. It requires liability, causation, and injury. That's what this court has said over and over. And there is no, the question is, has our claim against the Navy accrued? And I think Your Honor will not be able to say in any way, shape, or form that the Navy has caused us an injury. So under the statutory meaning of accrual, that answers Your Honor's chicken and egg question. It says that for the claim, for whatever process the Navy has in place, they call it equitable adjustment, they can call it a mandatory pre-claim procedure. But what they can't do is dispense with causation, and the Navy hasn't done that. Even if Your Honors were to disagree with me on that, of course, we have a distinct...
Let me give you another crazy hypothetical, and I don't want to make you go over your time too much, but suppose that my house gets hit by lightning.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So the lightning is the cause of the injury to my house. Do I have a claim for insurance as of the day the lightning hit my house, or does my claim for insurance not start accruing until the insurance company denies my claim?
The latter, Your Honor. And if you ran into court on the day after your insurance company and filed your suit, they would say to you, what are you doing here? Your insurance company hasn't said they're not going to pay you. We're not you're not suing, the Almighty for lightning. You're suing the insurance company. The insurance company hasn't said they're not going to pay you. There's no breach. There's no causation. All you have is an injury. Your Honor's hypo is exactly this case, and that's I think if that I'm not aware of any case that would say you could.
I've never seen a contract lawyer get quite this excited.
Well, sorry, Your Honor. It's just I get energized about this stuff. But I think it's important. I think Your Honor's hypo gets right to it. You could not have filed a claim the day after the lightning hits your house, and there is no case that says you could. It's precisely because the OSHA is the lightning. Right? Except that I can actually sue OSHA under the APA. But OSHA for contract purposes is the lightning. It is not like the insurance company. What the government said here is we will pay you for OSHA's causing you harm. But as I said, there is also, we also have a five-boat argument and a two-boat argument. And with respect to the five-boat argument, the claim is related but actually quite distinct. And that is that we were being paid every penny that we were asked for and every penny that we were entitled to. And it's not until December 15th of 2006, that we have any impact at all from the government because they are paying us each and any harm caused by the government because they're paying us for each and every claim. The board's response to that, right, is twofold. The first is to say, well, that doesn't matter because once there's impact outside the, you know, before the critical date, you lose not only on one boat, but on all six boats. But that is at odds with basic principles, and this is why I say what the board has done can't be reconciled with basic contract law. That is at odds with basic principles of divisibility. There is no doubt of two fundamental propositions, right? One that is in a divisible contract. You have a contract for six boats. Your claim accrues with respect to each boat separately. And
counsel,
second,
counsel, your time has expired. We'll give you two minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate it.
Obviously, the government thinks you missed the boat. Okay. What Mr. Grimaldi has to say about it.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. Your Honors, I would like to start with a little bit of a framework here with what we're looking at here. We're looking at a scenario where we have a contractor that the board found knew had obligation to file a request for equitable adjustment, knew had a statute of limitations issue, and decided not to file on time.
I guess,
and
here's my question, yes, to you. And all my hypos with him, as I was sitting here thinking, if this were a breach of contract cause of action, mm-hmm. as opposed to the type of cause of action it is, he'd have a good argument, wouldn't he, for the idea that the Navy hasn't breached until they refuse to pay for something that they owed pursuant to the contract. Would you agree that under a statute of limitations case, if this were a breach of contract, he's probably right about how the statute of limitations
Yeah, because operated. Until the government says, I'm not going to do that, you don't know it's not going to occur, Your Honor.
But instead what he's doing here is inserting an administrative exhaustion level into the need to file a claim
right.
for an equitable adjustment.
Absolutely, Your Honor. And well, we can come up with different hypotheticals here.
Just to put a finer point on that, mm-hmm. if H30E did not exist in the contract, then
very different case, Your Honor.
Then your position
yeah.
falls away.
Well, yeah, because my argument basically today is, hey, everyone, let's look at E. E is so important to this because if Your Honors don't mind, I'll take you through the clause, H30 clause.
Which page in the appendix?
The page, it begins on 279 and proceeds to 281, Your Honor. And it has five different sections in it, A through E. On 279, you have A, and this is the definitions, and this tells you what changes in law is actually applied, because not any change in law is going to trigger this clause. Section B, which is on the following page, 280, states that if there's been an enacted or a change in the law, the contractor can get an adjustment to the price. And it says, shall be adjusted as provided in paragraph C below. Paragraph C is the price methodology on how you actually change this, because this is not a standard pricing contract, and I can get into that in a moment, Your Honors. Part D is the notifications clause. Please tell the government when this occurs. And Part E is tells the contractor what to do if there has been a change in law, and that is file a request for an equitable adjustment.
Well, most equitable adjustments arise because the agency says we want more done. right?
Well, that would be a change order, Your Honor. And there can be, there's a difference between a change and some equitable adjustments, okay? So my colleague said that the usual case is the government asks you to do something. But what about differing sites, Your Honor, where the contractor shows up and it's not what was anticipated on the site? What if there's no H-30 clause, but there's a change in the law? A contractor can still ask for more money through a request for an equitable adjustment. The government might not say yes, might not have any obligation to say yes in that scenario, but that these are all scenarios where the contracting agency is not ordering a change, but a request for equitable adjustment can be filed. In that scenario, there's a requirement to file a request for equitable adjustment and ask for it. So chicken or egg, Your Honor, it's very clear here which came first. We'll never answer the chicken and egg question, but we know what must come first in this case, and that's a request for equitable adjustment.
Is it possible that their requirement to file an equitable adjustment claim does not kick in until the Navy says, no, I'm not paying you your requested amount?
Not on the plain meaning of this text of the H-30 clause. The language that Electric Boat wants to be in Section B, essentially isn't there, Your Honor. Electric Boat wants Section B to have a mandatory pre-claim procedure that the government must follow. But there's nothing in Section B that says that. The only procedures that must be followed here are in D and E in the H-30 clause. So I would say to the court that there needs to be significantly different language in the H-30 clause for that to occur. The impact of siding with Electric Boat and their version of this would be far-reaching and harmful to contractors. This language of shall adjust the price, shall adjust is found in every contract clause that's for changes, including the clause that is in this contract, which is, apologize, Your Honors, I just want to get you the right number because, as you know, there's many different changes clause, 52-253-1. That clause says, and I can quote it to you, the fixed price changes clause, 48 CFR 52-243-1, I apologize, I gave the wrong number, says the contracting officer shall make an equitable adjustment in the contract price, the delivery price, or both, and shall modify the contract in Part B. This shall language is part of government contracting.
So when is it you think the claim accrued in light of H-30 and the demand that they must file for an equitable adjustment? When do you think the triggering event was?
The board was correct. It was August 15th, 2005. And the reason for that is twofold. The first being OSHA was enacted prior to that point. And in August would be the first time under the H-30 clause that Electric Boat could ask for an equitable adjustment because there was a 2-year waiting period as well.
But what if they didn't, as of August 5th, 2005, know the amount of damage they were going to suffer in order to articulate with precision? Do you have to do that when you file for an equitable adjustment? Can you say, I want to give you a heads up, government, this is going to cost me more. I'm not sure how much more yet, but it's going to cost me more. Or do you have to have a sum certain in your equitable adjustment?
I'm going to ask that in two. For this specific contract, it's going to differ from most contracts, and I'll tell you the answer to both, Your Honor. For this specific contract, the way that you get an adjustment is not a check or a bag with a dollar sign on it. You get a shifting of a line on a graph. So if you have a graph with profit and costs, there's a line on it. And the more money that Electric Boat can save in the cost part, the higher their profits. So what this clause does is allow for a shifting of that line out to account for the additional costs. So the remedy under this clause is not necessarily a bag of money. It's to move this line out so that in the future when you bill, you're not...
But don't they have to know where to move it? They have to know what the additional cost
yes, you
is
do.
Going to be.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So what the estimates that they came up with was 272 hours per day
when
to comply with this.
When was that estimate? Because I see on June 27th of 2007, they submitted a proposal for additional costs of $56 million. So was, are you suggesting, and so June 27th of 2007 is much later than August 5th of 2005. Are you saying that there is evidence that as of August 5th of 2005, they understood with certainty what the cost would be?
Your Honor, yes, my understanding from the testimony below, that estimate was created well before that time period, that their subcontractors informed them of the additional time that it would take for them to do the welding hot work, if it will, earlier than that.
For the claim, Your Honor, to accrue, this equitable adjustment claim to accrue, mm-hmm. you don't need to know the some certain or the actual costs for the claim to accrue. Is that right?
Well, the KBR case talks about having a sum certain in mind. It does not say that you need to know exactly how much money. You can use future estimates. That's the way that it's been interpreted, what needing a sum certain is having a future estimate as to how you're going to do it. This theory that Electric Boat had on 272 hours per boat is their estimate. Certainly, as they say, they're not proceeding with the some certain argument any longer, Your Honors, in addition to that. But I just want to note one last thing here, Your Honors, is how this could hurt other government contractors. What they're asking for is a rule that says until the government says no to you, you can't file a claim. The other thing they're asking for is a rule that says until everything is fully funded, you cannot file a claim. This hurts contractors because they cannot put forth their claims at a time when they recognize they're going to be incurring costs and when they can estimate costs. They have
to
wait for
everything. So we have to be cautious, even if we were sympathetic in this case, to the idea that we'd actually be hurting contractors and lots of others because they wouldn't be able to file the claims. Because if we say it doesn't start to accrue until a later period of time, that means all these people who are going into court sooner should not be allowed in.
Right, Your Honor. What you're going to wind up seeing from my office is a lot of motions to dismiss because the claims aren't ripe. That's what's going to happen if we take their view on the law. And their view on the law is importing all this insurance law, all these basic fundamentals of contracting that don't account for the definition of claim accrual in the FAR. This body of law in the FAR has been...
Well, what is the definition for claim accrual in the FAR?
The definition for claim accrual is at FAR 48 CFR. Let me get it exactly for you, Your Honor. I could try to read it off the top of my head, but I'll get it wrong. It's FAR 33201. And it says the date of injury starts accrual of the claim. It says the date when all events that fix the alleged liability of either the government or the contractor and permit assertion of the claim were known or should have been known. For liability to be fixed, some injury must have occurred. However, monetary damages need not have been incurred.
Electric need not have been what?
Incurred.
Incurred.
Correct. You don't have to lose the money yet, Your Honor. And that goes towards their argument of, well, until December 15th, 2006, we were getting paid. The United States wasn't paying them for the hot work prior to that date. The United States was paying them on their progress payments like they were entitled to under the contract. What Electric Boat was doing was eating into its allowable cost that it could spend with this hot work. So really, it's like going to a restaurant repeatedly and getting overcharged every time you go to this restaurant. And then at the end of the week, you have no money left in your wallet. When are you injured? At the end of the week when you have no money left in your wallet? Or every time that you're actually overcharged? And that's the scenario that they're fighting against and saying it wasn't until actually they lost the ability to bill that they're injured. And that does not comport with government contracting law. If the court has no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. Mr. Gershengorn, 2 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm going to make a number of quick points. First, Judge Chen, with respect to your question of whether they had to go for an equitable adjustment after this was denied, the answer is yes. If you look at Appendix 708, that is exactly what the contracting officer said. This is the May 2nd decision letter. She said at the end, should the contractor determine to pursue an REA, a request for equitable adjustment, the government recommends the contract provide the submittal by June 3rd, 2011. The answer is yes. Judge Moore, you asked about a breach. I want to make 2 points on that. First, Appendix 75, we have brought a breach of contract claim. I took the government to concede that that was timely. That is count 2 of our complaint, Appendix 75. Third, What the government is trying to do, even with respect to equitable adjustment, is read causation out of the requirements. The government justifies that. It is extraordinary. What the government said is, our flaw is that we're trying to bring in regular contract principles into this area. What this court has said is exactly the opposite, that those regular contract principles are precisely what governs in this area because these are contracts. Finally, Your Honor, I think it's critically important that I pivot at least briefly to the two-boat argument, because whatever you think about the six-boat argument, it is black-letter law that a claim cannot accrue on contingent in performance until the contingency is removed. It is undisputed that on the last two boats, there was $2.3 billion of work that the Navy had not made available. It is undisputed that we could not use that. The reason that money was not available is because the government wanted it that way. The government wanted Congress to be able to walk away, cancel the contract, and leave us with zero. That's fine. They can do that. But the flip side is that our claims on those two boats for that $2.3 billion of work do not accrue until the contingency is removed. We cannot start work. We cannot spend those funds until Congress appropriates and until the Navy makes that available. Again, black letter law says that a claim on contingent performance does not accrue until the contingency is removed. The government does not dispute that. And indeed, case after case from the board says that. That's DynCorp, Gray Personnel, and Fluor. Those are situations in which the claim accrues, the accounting obligation on the first year, the accounting problem on the first year accrues. And what the board says and what the government argues when the shoe is on the other foot is that the claim doesn't accrue
until
those are
used. Counsel, you have your own accounting problem.
Thank you, Your Honor. I appreciate the court's patience. Thank you.